Welcome to Women Waken, a podcast that helps you heal spiritually from trauma in relationships, childhood, and early life conditioning to shift from a place of codependency into a divine feminine state of love, harmony, abundance, and joy. On Women Waken, we begin the journey to waken from the illusion of needing to prove our worth into the divine experience of knowing our worth. On today's Identify and Heal solo episode, I wanted to take the time and get into a topic that I've been wanting to do for a while now, reviewing and shedding light on and explaining the four different types of trauma responses. These, of course, include fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. I wanted to get into these because during this time with eclipse season, with so much intensity in the air, we're about to go into Mercury retrograde, we can have events coming up that are really eliciting strong emotional responses, strong emotional upheaval, and it can be illuminating to see how we respond to these events. And if these various trauma responses come up, I wanted to offer some ways on how to move through them, how to identify them, and how to work with them so that moving forward, we're no longer resorting back to survival mechanisms, but moving into a place where we're mindfully aware of what's going on and able to respond to it and handle it in a healthy, aware manner. So take a listen and enjoy. Hey everybody, Whitney here with an Identify and Heal solo episode. And this is an episode, it's another one that has been in my book. I keep this little notebook of the different topics and concepts I want to cover for solo episodes. And it's been on my list for quite a while to do for an Identify and Heal episode. But I've been kind of dancing around it because it's a more involved, pretty complex one. But I feel like I'm ready to get into it because I'm feeling inspired by this eclipse season. An eclipse season compounded by Mercury retrograde. So guess what? Stuff is going to come up. Stuff is going to come up that's going to ruffle our feathers, that's going to perhaps challenge us to create some friction, to create a bit of chaos maybe, dare I say. Although we made it through the lunar eclipse, which means like we're still thickly in that energy. But the lunar eclipse, what they're saying is that the lunar eclipse is really like boiling up and bringing to the surface what needs to leave. And the eclipse is going to hit us with some bam, with some inspiration, that solar power, right? The solar is representative of the masculine. So it's often about eureka, like light bulb moments when we recognize a new path we want to take, a new thing we want to do, something we want to incorporate. Whereas the lunar energy can be a bit more of, oh, this is what I'm going to kind of get away from. But the lunar energy and in general, eclipse and of course, beautiful, lovely Mercury retrograde is bringing events into our lives to show us what's no longer working for us and what we need to actually finally release and let go of to no longer continue to have that experience. And with events like that, it could bring up some past trauma, potentially some past upsetting events. It could create a situation that echoes, I spoke of this a few episodes ago, that events in our current life can sort of echo previous past traumas and bring up the same responses, which leads to my topic, which I haven't even said yet, trauma responses. I said in the intro, but it deserves repeating. This episode is about trauma responses. I'm going to put my therapist hat on and get a bit more into my technical zone. Not that there's a whole lot of technical literature around the four trauma responses. There is. But it's not that extensive. I think there could actually be a lot more research done. I'm speaking mostly from my personal understanding, from what I've learned throughout my time being a therapist and going through various courses and seminars and the books I've read, but also, yeah, from my own experience, my own understanding of what a trauma response is. So let's first identify that. What is a trauma response? And why do I think it correlates a bit with the eclipse season? So a trauma response is literally how you personally respond to traumatic events, traumatic situations? How do you, and how does your body, how does your energetic body, how does your emotional body, what mode does it go into when you are in an upsetting situation? Because that's what it's more about. It's not really even a response, because when we think of a response, we think of something that we choose, right? Like, okay, well, how am I going to respond to this person's question? How am I going to respond to this situation? It's a choice. Yet a trauma response is often more of a mode, a state that we revert into when we're faced with upsetting traumatic situations. I would even say that each of the four main trauma responses are actually a bit of a dissociative state, because we're almost removing ourselves from that logical mind that's able to make decisions, a mental, intentional decision. It almost feels out of your control. You know this, we each know what it's like to have these responses where you feel you don't even know why. You don't even really know why you're going into this state, you're going into this zone when these things happen. So let me introduce the four different trauma responses. Many of you have probably heard them, some of you may have not. So I'm gonna state them and describe them and give a few examples of different ones. And I know that throughout my life, I have found some of these to be very illuminating. Like so many other tools, through therapy, through psychology, and through spiritual concepts, you can hear it and say, oh my gosh, I've never put a name to that, but I've always done that, or I've always had that experience and never known what the heck it was. So let's get into it. The four different trauma responses are fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. Fawn was actually just introduced more recently. I think it was for a good while, it was just the three: fight, flight, or freeze. And then fawning was introduced. And I'm so glad it was, because I am probably most prominent in having that type of response. So I can give some examples of that when we get there. But those are the primary four, and they wanted to be fun with it and have them all start with the letter F. That's fine. It works. So what are these? Let's start with the first one, which is fight. So my thought, and it's sort of the general thought, is that the reason that we develop a certain trauma response is because the first time that we experienced a traumatic, upsetting, scary, potentially dangerous scenario or situation, we were in a certain place, we played a certain role. And so we knew best to respond to something in a certain way. And just like trauma itself, which, as we know, if you've heard of the wonderful book, The Body Keeps Score, where it talks about how trauma actually lives at a cellular level in your body, where your body keeps that memory, it keeps that energy of fear and of that deep upsetting trauma. And so when new experiences come up that represent that or that are similar to that, even if it's not the same situation, you can have the same feelings come up and therefore the same responses that you had at that time. And likely those first trauma experiences were not when we were, you know, in our 20s, 30s. It was probably when we were younger. So we didn't necessarily have a very mature response to it. We just did whatever came most quickly to us, which again is usually based on the type of role we had or the type of understanding we had about ourselves or our surroundings. So let me give an example using the fight response. The fight response is usually related to somebody who feels hypervigilant, that they have to protect or take care of things themselves, that they've always had to be the one that has to act, the one that has to make sure everyone else is okay, the one that has to respond to things quickly. It can also be the type of person who tends to be reactive. Most people in this world are either reactive or they are being active. So let me kind of share what that means. When you're reactive, it's like the type of person who nothing is their fault, everything is someone else's fault. So you're like, what? I messed up this thing. Like you said, I did this wrong. Well, that wasn't my fault. That was because of this person. They're reacting. They're putting the onus on someone else. Other people take on the the culpability. They take on responsibility and they say, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. You're right. I did everything wrong. So they're actively taking on that responsibility rather than putting it onto somebody else. So rather than being reactive, don't tell me that I fucked this up. They're saying, oh my gosh, yes, you're right. Which that obviously is another example of a trauma response, which is the next one, which is to freeze. Anyways, but right now we're on fight. So when somebody is more reactive, they are going to go into fight mode. They feel like they can't just let something happen. They have to act. They have to be reactive. So let's say somebody comes around and they seem slightly threatening. Their first instinct might be to fight the situation, to get aggressive, to get loud, to get defensive. That's a fight trauma response for somebody who, again, their early message was, you need to defend yourself at all costs. You need to prove yourself that you are not going to be fucked with. And so they become in the mode almost dissociatively. Like, people will describe this. If you've ever met somebody with a real anger issue, they'll say that they sometimes almost don't remember going in a fit of rage. It's just like they enter into this mode, and it can be a real trauma response. That can be the fight trauma response. The second one is flight. So flight is somebody who is kind of the opposite. They feel like they can't. They don't know how to take action. They don't know how to show a sense of fortitude or strength or ability to stand up for themselves, to defend themselves. They just need to get out of there. They need to flee. They need to get out. They need to find safety or shelter. And this is someone who maybe early in life felt completely helpless when they went through a traumatic event, when they went through an upsetting event. They were completely violated by something that was coming towards them. They felt totally helpless and they just wanted to get away from it. They don't want to face it, like the fighters, right? They don't want to try. They're like, forget that. I just want to get the hell out. I want to flee. I want to flight. I just want to run away from it. So they leave. And again, it can be dissociative. People can be in situations that maybe aren't even that threatening, but they just get this uncomfortable feeling. And these can be those type of people who don't really know how to sit with discomfort. Like, let's say you guys like you go to a party with a group of people and one person is just not feeling it. They feel uncomfortable. They feel anxious. And they're like, I have to leave. I have to leave. Right? Or even at a smaller level, have you ever had a friend or maybe even a partner who didn't seem to be able to sit with the discomfort of an argument? You could actually, and this, everything's connected, right? So flight is kind of connected to avoidant attachment style. So someone who, rather than being able to sit down with their significant other when there's a fight, there's something to address, rather than be able to sit with that and say, okay, you're right, we're having some issues, they're like, no, I just need to go home. Like, let me just go home. We're having a fight. I just want to get out of here. Let me get out. That's what people with the flight response have. There's this deep discomfort with having to sit in a place where they don't feel safe, where they don't feel secure, where they feel that their safety is jeopardized, that their well-being is jeopardized, where there's this sense of discomfort. They don't do well with discomfort, so they just want to get out. Rather than trying to fight against it, they just want to flee. And again, it can be dissociative. Like, they can just go into this state. And honestly, it's reminding me of people who develop addictions, right? Because people who abuse substances or food, well, food is a substance, who abuse things it's often to escape, right? So it's like, oh, this has been a brutal day. I don't even want to think about what I'm dealing with and how uncomfortable this is for me. So I'm just going to take something because even if you're not physically fleeing, you can flee situations by trying to go into a state of oblivion, dissociate, like just get away from it. So that's sort of what flight response is about. So you can see that distinction between fight and flight. One person wants to face something head on, like something you'd see out of a movie, right? I've been watching Game of Thrones, recently rewatching it. The Night's Watch on the wall. And they're just like ready, all these crazy men in the wild, and they're ready to fucking fight whatever comes their way. They're hypervigilant. Someone could look at them the wrong way and they'd be like, oh, I'm gonna get you. And they'll be like, what? Come at me. So that's fight. I don't know if that analogy was needed, but whatever, I'm keeping it. And then there's flight, who people are like, bye. There's a dude on a horse coming at me with a sword. I'm out of here. Like, I would rather run as fast as I can than try to face this. Are you kidding me? So there are two examples. The first two, which I think probably were the original two. I think back in the day, at some point, there was only two, fight or flight. There absolutely was. But just like everything else, things are broadening. There's new understandings. So now we got two more. Are you ready? Here we go. The third one is freeze. So the freeze response is interesting because it's kind of counterintuitive, right? It doesn't make a ton of sense. I can get fight, right? There's a threat coming towards you. There's an upsetting thing. Yeah, make an effort to go against it. Make an effort to try and face it. Now I'm thinking of a bear. I think I've shared this on the show, but I got really into, I was looking in a lot into like different national parks I wanted to visit, which you know how YouTube is, you go down wormholes, and then I got down a wormhole of bear attacks. I have spoken to this, so I'm gonna not elaborate again. But now I'm thinking of a bear, right? It makes sense. If you see a bear, some people will be like, I'm gonna fight it. I'm not gonna mess with me. I'm gonna try and get something and get at him. Or another person might try to run, but it doesn't make a ton of sense to freeze. Even though there are some animals where you're supposed to freeze, I can't think of it. Maybe a bear. Sometimes I think a grizzly, you're not supposed to run from it for sure. And you're not really gonna win in a fight with a grizzly. I'm going off. But some people freeze. Some people freeze in situations. And why is this? Well, this is probably the ultimate, well, not the ultimate, but it's one of the deeper levels of dissociation because it doesn't necessarily make sense. It's almost like a little kid who pulls a blanket over their head because they're like, if I can't see them, they can't see me. It's like you wanna believe if you just totally just refrain from responding, from reacting, that somehow like you won't have to face the situation. And a lot of the times, freezing as a trauma response comes from perhaps a child that witnessed domestic abuse or violence. Maybe they weren't necessarily the recipient of it. Maybe they saw their parents violently fighting. Maybe there was physical abuse, verbal abuse, and they just had to stand there and they couldn't do anything. And they didn't really know how to be present with it because it was so awful to watch, but they also knew that nothing they do could change what was happening. So you just kind of freeze and almost imagine, you dissociate as if you're not even there. Like you become a ghost, right? Like if you just freeze, maybe nothing bad will happen. Maybe you won't stir the pot and the violence and anger won't be turned towards you. Maybe if you dissociate and freeze, you can pretend like it's not even happening. Because that's another thing I've worked with clients, people who've been through trauma, and they'll say, you know, I realize now that when I was going through that event, I almost just wanted to believe that it wasn't real. Because that is a freeze response where we're just trying to disappear. And if we just stay still enough, and if we just try to pretend like it's not real, then maybe it won't be real. But that's the devastating nature of trauma, is that it is real. And whether we try to fight it or run from it or freeze when it's happening, it still stays with us. There's no way to really beat it, because what it is just a deep, profound experience that causes a lot of distress on our systems, on all systems, mentally, physically, and emotionally, which needs to be addressed and released. Because when that sense, because what trauma ultimately comes down to is you do not feel safe. You do not feel secure in your environment. You feel violated, right? It's you're in a situation where you feel you have no control over what happened to you and what you went through, what you endured. And that is a terrible feeling. When people are attacked, when women go through sexual assault, or when anyone goes through sexual assault, and they'll describe just how absolutely horrifying it was to feel so helpless and feel such power from another person. Because we don't really know power, right? We don't really know how powerful a human can be until they take away our ability to say no and to fight back and to do anything about something. If you're pinned down and someone's taking advantage of you, it's a brutal way to understand, oh my gosh, I can't do anything. I want to defend myself. I want the situation to stop, but I can't. And that's the nature of all trauma, because it can be sexual in nature, it can be physical in nature, like an attack, being beaten up. It can also be verbal in nature, right? The nature of bullying is very significant because you're having these cruel comments and statements about you being hurled at you, and there's nothing you can do. You just have to sit there and take it. And some people more than others are fazed by it because it sticks with them. We often, especially as a young individual, as a child, as a teen, even a young adult and beyond, we believe what people say about us, especially as a child and a teen. So when you're repeatedly hurled verbal assaults at you, you're violated. It's a violation of your safety, right? And I can speak to this because I've said often on the show that I was bullied all through high school. And I remember that I would just sit there and just pray for it to be over. I would pray that they would stop doing it. I would walk through the halls and pray that I could make it through without somebody saying a rude or derogatory term to me. And when they said it, I would just, it was a little bit of a freeze response, because I would just kind of like sort of cringe and be like, okay, just keep going. Just keep, it'll pass. Which is like a brutal way. Like, that's literally how trauma is built. You're just trying to push through and survive. You're just trying to survive this moment that you have no control over how you're being hurt and abused. And that sticks with us at a cellular level. You can't just walk through it, because it's establishing a deep-seated fear and belief in you when that happens, that you're not safe, that you're not able to feel a sense of security because your security was robbed from you in those moments. We can absolutely heal from trauma. I talk about it all the time. That's a big part of what the show is about. But this episode is kind of a deep dive into how trauma is established and how we learn to respond to it, and then how we can learn to identify those responses and see, okay, I'm having a freeze response, but what is really happening in this moment? Am I really in danger? Is my security in jeopardy? Am I unsafe? And maybe you are, right? Maybe you're walking down the street and all of a sudden you just feel real uncomfortable and someone's approaching you, and your trauma response is to just stop and just stand there, right? Think about, again, this is a good illustration to show the different ones. Someone might be like, oh, I'm going to get my fucking keys just in my knuckles and I'll be ready to punch this guy if he tries anything. That's the fight response. The flight might be someone who just books it and runs the other direction without any real knowing of whether it's dangerous or not. And the freezer might just very quietly try to walk by, or maybe even just freeze when the person walks past. It's like a possum. Is it possums, right? They play dead. That's kind of the freeze response. So there's a good illustration for how it happens. But here's what you can do. Once you recognize what your go-to trauma response is, you can see it while it's happening. And again, sometimes it's so powerful if your trauma was deep enough and to the degree that you literally dissociate in any events that are reminiscent of it. It's a little harder because that's the nature of dissociation. You don't even realize you're doing it. You're checking out. You're really kind of just mentally disconnecting from the actions of your body and the emotions that you're feeling because it's too scary, too painful. That's why we go to therapy. Or whatever modality works for you, right? It doesn't have to be therapy. It can be hypnotherapy, which is still therapy. Or it can be like brain mapping or brain spotting or EMDR or Reiki, whatever you're using to clear that out of your system. That can help us to not just dissociatively go into these trauma responses so quickly, right? That can be helpful. So those are three. What's the fourth one? The fourth one's very interesting. It's fascinating. It was the most recently added one, fawning. So fawning, what does fawning mean? Well, it's not as intuitive and it's not quite as common, I would say. But it is a response that people have to what they might perceive as a traumatic event. So fawning is when you almost try to overly show kindness, to show connection, like to establish connection with something that you feel might be a dangerous or a potential threat. So it's rather than trying to protect yourself, it's like you're trying to almost bargain with this energy to not cause you harm. Like you're trying to find a place where it will soften for you, where it will not try to hurt you. So it's like you're really trying to appease whoever is potentially going to cause this danger, this threat, in order to prevent them from causing harm. But immediately this makes me think of, I don't know about you all, but I watched scary movies from the time I was little. And so I would stay up when I was trying to fall asleep. I'd be like, all right, so I'm out in the woods and Jason is there and he has his machete. But you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go up to him. I'm going to talk to him. I'm going to be like, listen, let's not fight. let's not kill anybody. Let me just give you a hug. Let's just go sit down and just put down the weapon. I remember thinking that as a kid. I don't know if anybody else did that, that I would bargain and try to create and appease that person. You can go do what you want to do, but first let's just take a moment and move into a more peaceful place. So you are, it's like you're bargaining. You're trying to, you believe that if you can sort of give them what they want, whatever that might be, that they won't cause this harm. And the problem with that is that it's deeply disempowering. We're not talking like a mediator, right? We're not talking like about someone who's in their right mind and is trying to establish that this person's actions are not appropriate and you need to intervene and talk to them. No, this is somebody who is literally almost trying to give themselves to somebody and be like, I will do whatever you want. I will be loving and kind if you just don't hurt me. And the problem with that, again, is that it disempowers you, but it also is causing you to feel like that's what you deserve, is just to be turned over to somebody who you feel is more powerful than you, who you feel exert control over you, will make you feel helpless. So you just want, it's almost like you want to say like, okay, just don't hurt me. I'll just do whatever you want. Like, you can take advantage of me. You can do this, but just, can we just do it in a peaceful way? It's kind of what it's saying. So you're fawning to that person. Let me give an example, because as I spoke before, or more recently in the past few years, I've realized that that's probably my most common trauma response. And I never saw it that way. It can even be like, if you're uncomfortable socially and you're easily intimidated by people, you almost forget yourself and you just fawn over someone else. You're like, oh my God, you're so amazing and you're so smart and you're really cool. And this might sound like somebody who meets a celebrity or someone they admire. That's a little different, but this is somebody who just doesn't know how to own their own ability, their own confidence. So they just sort of dump this affinity onto other people and like praise others because they don't really know how to stand their own ground in their own energy, in their own space. They don't want someone to have enough time to point out what might be their shortcomings or their insecurities. So they just fawn over somebody else. But that's different, a little bit different. It's still kind of a trauma response, because where this really comes from is somebody who felt belittled at a certain point in their life. They felt like they were not seen as someone of value, of worth, that they were maybe neglected. I think that fawning goes hand in hand with neglect. And I think that's why I understand it. I grew up with a very neglectful parent where I felt like I was never acknowledged, and my little child brain couldn't understand that. The best I could understand was, wow, I must not really be like very interesting or worth someone's time. So there's something wrong with me. So everybody else is of more value than I am, because if I was of value, this person, my parent, wouldn't treat me as if I am just an annoyance and not worth knowing. And it's very painful. And it's painful for anyone who has to have that experience. So fast forward, let me give you an example. As I said, I was bullied in high school. So after freshman year of college, I went back to my hometown like most of us do. And everybody was having parties as we do for the first few years after college. And it kind of peters off, right? But it's a big deal the first year back, because people are like, oh shit, like how is college? Let's all get the gang together. I went to this party with a few friends of mine, and I knew it was with some of the guys that used to bully me, because the guys that bullied me were in my class, the same class as I was. And I was like, whatever, I don't give a fuck. I don't care what they think. It's not a big deal. We get there and things were fine. Like I just kind of steered clear of those certain individuals and whatever. But I, you know, pretty quickly felt uncomfortable, because the party started dwindling, and then it was really just my friends and then these guys who were total assholes to me and always bullied me in high school. And I was like, I don't want to be here, but I wasn't the driver, so I couldn't leave. And so my friend and I went to another room and we were talking, and I had been drinking, and I didn't want to engage with anybody. So I just ended up falling asleep on the couch, staying alone in this one room. And this is kind of embarrassing, but I don't care. I mean, I'm not going to share it, because it's what happened to me. The next thing I know, somebody dumped a bucket of water on my head and then ran away laughing. And I saw them, like I opened my eyes and I saw the guy. And of course it was one of the guys who bullied me, running away. And then later I was just like in shock. I was like, seriously, did they just do that to me? And they were laughing and they're like, oh my God, that was toilet water. He just filled up a bucket from the toilet and dumped it all over Whitney. And they were all laughing. And I was just sitting there just in total shock. I can't believe that they just did this. Like, they're really going to fucking pull this shit still. High school's over and I was trying to get past it. These fuckers. Anyways, the example of fawning. I go outside and there's like a bonfire. And the guy that I know did it is sitting there. And there's this argument happening because my brother was there. And he goes up to the dude. He's like, why the fuck did you do that to my sister? What's your problem? And he's like, I didn't do it, man. Lying through his fucking teeth. But I was so hurt. And I was just so shocked that they would still do that to me, that I went over and sat by him. And I was like, did you really not do that? He's like, no, I didn't. But I saw him with my own eyes. I saw him do it. But I went into fawn response. I literally was trying to start conversation with him. I was trying to talk to him because it, like I said, it's almost like dissociation. Like, I just didn't want to believe that he would still feel or dislike me so much that he would do something like so cruel and like so gross to me. So I just sat there and was desperate for his attention and to engage with him. And I can't explain why, except for it was dissociative. Me today, I would be like, let's get the fuck out of here. Like, these people are idiots. Like, that was so fucked up. Like, let's just leave. But I went and sat right next to him for the rest of the party, which was like 2 hours. I wouldn't leave his side. And I remember feeling almost like this magnetic pull. It was like this energy of like, I just wanted that acceptance from him. I wanted to feel like I belonged with these people, because it's too hard to believe that there's certain people that hate you, is what I have found. It's too hard to believe, like going back to my childhood, those of us who have experienced neglect, it's too hard to believe that somebody really just doesn't care enough to give you the basic needs to feel safe and secure as a human, and especially as someone's child. It's too hard to believe that somebody dislikes you so much that they want to publicly humiliate you and cause you harm. So I chose to believe that his lies were true, even though I saw it. And I chose to try and connect with him. Again, fawning, right? You're trying to appease them and be like, almost like try to talk them out of whatever caused them to hurt you, right? Like, well, maybe he did throw water on me, but maybe, you know, if I talk to him, he'll like me more and won't think that way of me. So I think it's helpful to give examples of these things, especially fawning, because it is more rare and it's been more newly introduced and it can be hard to kind of understand. But it is, it's just sort of this almost kind of like forgetting of the self, total just, I am nothing and please just accept me. Please just don't hurt me. I'll do anything. I will appease you in any way possible if you just don't hurt me again or cause this pain. There you have it. We've made it through all four. Fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. Which one have you experienced? Have you experienced more than one? Have you experienced all four? Do you not really identify with any of them? Because that's also possible. Not everybody has a trauma response. And guess what? Not everything has a freaking label. Maybe you have a different trauma response. That's the only thing that bugs me about theory and psychology and everything is just really philosophy. We've made up things to represent patterns and behaviors. There are other different kinds of trauma responses. It is never only the ones that are prominent and that have been introduced, right? There's other things out there. So my biggest ask, my biggest invite is to just explore, because as I spoke of the power in identifying how we respond to potentially dangerous / traumatic situations is that we don't have to dissociate. We don't have to lose ourselves. We can act in the now, because when we're having a trauma response, we're acting from the place of the past, of what happened to us, of what our body has decided, what our body and our emotional body tell us. Oh no, you're not safe. You're going to get hurt again. This is going to be bad. So we dissociate and we go into automatic mode and we go into cruise control so we can just get by however we think will, again, keep us safe and secure and not hurt. But if we can have the wherewithal to recognize, okay, I'm feeling threatened by this person. I'm feeling like this strange energy. And so I just want to fawn to them. I want to see if I can get them to like me. Pull back a second and say, why would I want to do that? Like, what is it that's making me want to try and have a connection with this person that clearly does not have interest in a connection with me? Where is that coming from? If you're feeling hypervigilant and being like, this fucker, this guy looks like he wants to mess with me. Like, this guy looks like he might be trying to take this or that from me, or is not going to let me in to this event, whatever it is. Check yourself and be like, is that true of this current situation? Is there any reason to get fired up about this? Or is this coming from a different place? It's not always easy in the moment, but over time, just like everything else, the trauma response can begin to diminish as we begin to reprogram, to rewire our brain, to release that energy from our emotional body that tells us you're not safe when this happens. Red alert. It's like the red light flashing, like danger. Sometimes we are in danger, but even when we are in danger, trauma responses aren't always helpful. If we can act in a rational, present way, that's when we're usually going to approach a situation the best. When we're in a trauma response, again, we're just dissociating and may resort to something that's not the best fit for that current predicament. So I hope this was helpful. Again, it's a big topic. I encourage anyone who's feeling kind of a certain way about this, who's feeling like, whoa, 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 this feels really prevalent, to explore it, research it a bit. Maybe it's something to bring up with your therapist or whoever you're working with currently. Or if you're not working with somebody, maybe find someone. If you're like, damn, I feel like I have trauma responses daily, that's something to explore. Because we want to be actively choosing how we respond. And the nature of a trauma response is something that feels automatic. We, as I said, it's like you go into this mode almost out of your control, on autopilot. We want to reclaim and say, hey, this is not that. This situation is not me when I was 10 years old. This situation is not me when I was 18 years old. I can approach this differently. I can reclaim my sovereign ability to see a situation, respond to it with current data, not fear from the past, and act in what feels like the most appropriate and effective manner in this time. Okay, everybody, I hope that was helpful. Have a beautiful day. Take care. That wraps up our episode for today. Thank you so much for listening to Women Waken. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others and come back for more. If you'd like to connect with the Women Waken community, you can find us on Instagram at Women Waken. And if you follow Women Waken, you can get a free tarot card reading if you just send a DM. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and don't forget to let your unique light shine into this world.